Section 33 of the Algonquin Legends of New England. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Mary in Arkansas. The Algonquin Legends of New England, or Myths and Folklore of the Mi'kmaq, Passamaquoddy, and Penobscot Tribes, by Charles Godfrey Leland. Section 33. The Story of a Partridge and His Wonderful Wigwam. Once a man was traveling through the woods, and he heard afar off a sound as of footsteps beating the ground. So he sought to find the people that made it, and went on for a full week ere he came to them. And it was a man and his wife dancing about a tree, in top of which was a raccoon. They had, by their constant treading, worn a trench in the ground. Indeed, they were in it up to their waist. Footnote. To dance away the ground, or walk knee-deep in it, was characteristic of wizards. So was the hearing of any sound at an apparently incredible distance. To an Indian mind, this tale is weird and wonderful from the first words thereof. End footnote. Then being asked why they did this strange thing, they answered that, being hungry, they were trying to dance down the tree to catch the raccoon. Then the man who had come said, "Truly there is a newer and better way of felling trees, which has lately come unto the land." As they wished to know what this might be, he showed them how to cut it down, and did so, making it a condition that if they got the game they might have the meat, and he should get the skin. So when the tree fell, they caught the animal, and the woman, having tanned the skin, gave it to the man, and he went his way. And being afar, in a path in the forest, he met another man, and was greatly amazed at him because he was wearing on his head a house, or a large birch wigwam of many rooms. He was frightened at first of such a sight, but the man, putting down his house, shook hands with him, and seemed to be a right honest good fellow. Then while they smoked and talked, the man of the house, seeing the skin of Hespens, or that of the raccoon, in the other's belt, said, "Well, that is a fine pelt. Where did you get it, brother?" And he, answering, told all the story of the dancing man and wife, whereupon he of the house became mightily anxious to buy it, offering one thing after another for it, and at last the house, which was accepted. And examining it, the buyer was amazed to find how many rooms it contained, and how full it was of good furniture. "Truly," said he, "I can never carry this as you do." "Yes, you can," replied the Pilwemontsowin, Passamaquoddy, "one who belongs somewhere else, a stranger. Do but try it." So he essayed and lifted it easily, for he found it as light as any bassinode or basket. So they parted, and he went on carrying his cabin till nightfall, when coming to a hard wood ridge near a good spring of water, he resolved to settle there. Footnote. A hard wood ridge, that is, where there is plenty of birch, ash, and such trees as are necessary for baskets, dishes, canoes, and other Indian wants. Hence it is mentioned in many tales as a desirable place to live. End footnote. And searching, he found a room in which there was a very fine bed, covered with a white bearskin. Footnote. A sure sign of sorcery. End footnote. And as it was very soft and he was very weary, he slept well. In the morning, when he awoke, what was his astonishment and delight to see above him, hanging to the beams, all kinds of nice provisions, venison, hams, ducks, baskets of berries and of maple sugar, with many ears of Indian corn. And as he, in his joy, stretched out his arms and made a jump towards all these dainties, behold, the white bearskin melted and ran away, for it was the snow of winter, and his arms spread forth into wings, and he flew up to the food, which was the early buds of the birch on which they hung. Footnote. Birch buds are the food of the partridge. The unexpected ending of this tale signifies the sudden return of spring. As told by an Indian, it is very effective. This tale was told me by Thomas Josephs. End footnote. And he was a partridge, who after the manner of his kind had been wintering under a snowdrift, and now came forth to greet the pleasant spring. How the Partridge Built Good Canoes for All the Birds, and a Bad One for Himself. When a partridge beats upon a hollow log, he makes a noise like an Indian at work upon a canoe. And when an Indian taps at a canoe, it sounds afar off like the drumming of a partridge, even of Mitchetess. And this comes because that Nagharnayu, of ancient days, the partridge, was the canoe builder for all the other birds, yes, for all at once. And on a certain day they everyone assembled, and each got into his bark. And truly it was a brave sight to see. First of all, Kichi-plagun, the eagle, entered his great shell and paddled off, using the ends of his wings. And then came Jokakus, the owl, doing the same. And Kasku, the crane. We saw Weehais, the bluebird, Tijiskus, the snipe, and Megsetchipsis, the blackbird, all came sailing proudly after. Even the tiny Alamuset, the hummingbird, had a dear little boat, and for him the good partridge had made a pretty little paddle, only that some thought it rather large, for it was almost an inch long. And Ishmegwis, the fishhawk, who lived on the wing, cried in amazement, Akwed en skuche, a canoe is coming, when he beheld this beautiful squadron standing out to sea. But when Mitchetess, the great builder, was asked why he had not built a canoe for himself, he merely looked mysterious and drummed. And being further questioned by the birds, he shook his head, and at last hinted that when he built a canoe unto himself, it would be indeed a marvel, yea, a wonder such as even birds' eyes had never beheld, an entire novelty, and something to dream of. And this went on for many days. But in due time it was noised abroad that the wonderful canoe had at last been really built, and would soon be shown. And at an appointed time all the birds assembled on the banks to behold this new thing. Now the partridge had reasoned that if a boat having two ends could be rowed in two ways, one which was all ends, all round, could be rowed in every way. So he had made a canoe which was exactly like a nest, or perfectly round. And this idea had greatly amazed the honest feathered folk, who were astonished that so simple a thing had not occurred to all of them. But what was their wonder when Partridge, having entered his canoe and proceeded to paddle, made no headway at all? For it simply turned round and round, and ever and again the same way, let him work it as he would. And after wearying himself, and all in vain, he went ashore, and flying far inland, hid himself for very shame under the low bushes on the earth, where he yet remains. This is the reason why he never seeks the seas or rivers, and has ever since remained an inland bird. Footnote. Having met Mr. Lewis Mitchell, the Indian member of the legislature in Maine, one day in Eastport, I asked him to occupy the few minutes which would pass before I should take the steamboat for Calais by telling me a story. He complied by narrating the foregoing. It is very remarkable that the Indian storytellers of ancient days should have taken it into their heads to satirize an idea which has been of late carried out completely by the Russian Admiral Popov in his celebrated circular war steamer. The story and all the Indian words in it are Passamaquoddy. End footnote. The Mournful Mystery of the Partridge Witch, setting forth how a young man died from love. Of the olden time two brothers went hunting in the autumn, and that as far as the headwaters of the Penobscot, where they remained all winter. But in March their snowshoes gave out, as did their moccasins, and they wished that a woman were there to mend them. When the younger brother returned first to the lodge the next day, which he generally did, to get it ready for the elder, he was astonished to find that someone had been there before him, and that, too, in the housekeeping. For garments had been mended, the place cleaned and swept, a fire built, and the pot was boiling. He said nothing of this to his brother, but returning the next day at the same time, found that all had been attended to, as at first. And again he said nothing. But in the morning, when he went forth to hunt, he did but go a little way, and returning watched, from a hidden place, the door. And there came a beautiful and graceful girl, well attired, who entered the wigwam. And he, stepping softly, looking through a hole in the hut, saw her very busy with his housekeeping. Then he entered, and she seemed to be greatly alarmed and confused. But he calmed her, and they soon became good friends, sporting together very happily all day long like children, for indeed they were both young. When the sun's height was little and his shadows long, the girl said, "I must go now. I hear your brother coming, and I fear him. But I will return tomorrow. Adio." So she went, and the elder brother knew nothing of what had happened. The next day she came again, and once more they played in sunshine and shadow until evening. But ere she went, he sought to persuade her to remain always. And she, as if in doubt, answered, "Tell thy brother all, and it may be that I will stay and serve ye both. For I can make the snowshoes and moccasins which ye so much need, and also canoes." Then she departed with the day, and the elder, returning, heard from his brother all that had happened, and said, "Truly I should be glad to have someone here to take care of the wigwam and make snowshoes." So she came in the morning, and hearing from the younger that his brother had consented to her coming, was very glad, and went away, as in haste. But she returned about noon, drawing a toboggan piled up with garments and arms, for she was a huntress. Indeed, she could do all things as few women could, whether it were cooking, needlework, or making all that men need. And the winter passed very pleasantly, until the snow grew soft, and it was time for them to return. Till she came, they had little luck in hunting, but since her coming all had gone well with them, and they now had a wonderful quantity of furs. Then they returned in a canoe, going down the river to their village. But as they came near it, the girl grew sad, for she had thrown out her soul to their home, though they knew it not, by Milabigiv, footnote, Passamaquoddy, clairvoyance, or state of vision, end footnote. And suddenly she said, as they came to a point of land, "Here I must leave, I can go no further. Say nothing of me to your parents, for your father would have but little love for me." And the young men sought to persuade her, but she only answered sorrowfully, "It cannot be." So they came home with their furs, and the elder was so proud of their luck and their strange adventure that he could not hold his peace, but told all. Then his father was very angry and said, "All my life I have feared this. Know that this woman was a devil of the woods, a witch of the Mitchahant, a sister of the Unagamis and of the Ketequis, footnote, goblins and ghost, end footnote." And he spoke so earnestly and so long of this thing that they were afraid, and the elder, being persuaded by the sire, went forth to slay her, and the younger followed him afar. So they sought her by the stream, and found her bathing, and seeing them she ran up a little hill, and as she ran the elder shot an arrow at her. Then there was a strange flurry about her, a fluttering of scattered feathers, and they saw her fly away as a partridge. Returning, they told all this to their father, who said, "You did well. I know all about these female devils who seek to destroy men. Verily, this was a she Mikumwess." Footnote. The Mikumwess is a Robin Goodfellow who plays pranks on people or treats them kindly according to his caprice. End footnote. But the younger could not forget her, and longed to see her again. So one day he went into the woods, and there he indeed found her, and she was as kind as before. Then he said, "Truly it was not by my good will that my brother shot at you." And she answered, "Well do I know that, and that it was all by your father. Yet I blame him not, for this is an affair of Nakarnayu, the days of old, and even yet it is not at an end, and the greatest is to come. But let the day be only a day unto itself. The things of tomorrow are for tomorrow, and those of yesterday are departed." So they forgot their troubles, and played together merrily all day long in the woods and in the open places, and told stories of old times till sunset. And as the cockagoose, or crow, went to his tree, the boy said, "I must return." And she replied, "Whenever you would see me, come to the woods, and remember what I say. Do not marry anyone else, for your father wishes you to do so, and he will speak of it to you, and that soon. Yet it is for your sake only that I say this." Then she told him, word by word, all that his father had said. But he was not astonished, for now he knew that she was not as other women, but he cared not. And he grew brave and bold, and then he was above all things. And when she told him that if he should marry another, he would surely die, it was as nothing to him. Then returning, the first thing his father said was, "My son, I have provided a wife for you, and the wedding must be at once." And he said, "It is well, let it be so." Then the bride came. For 4 days they held the wedding dance. 4 days they feasted. But on the last day he said, "This is the end of it all." And he laid him down on a white bearskin, and a great sickness came upon him. And when they brought the bride to him, he was dead. Truly the father knew what ailed him, and more withal, of which he said nothing. But he liked the place no longer, and he and his went away therefrom, and scattered far and wide. This strange story recalls the Undine of La Motte Fouqué. There is in it an element of mystery and destiny, equal in every way to anything in German literature. The family secret, touched on but never explained, which ends in such a death, is, speaking from an artistic point of view, very skillfully managed. It must be borne in mind that in this, as in most of these tales, there are associations and chords which make as gold to an Indian that which is only copper, or at best silver, to the civilized reader of my translations. There is a characteristic feature of this story superior to anything in Undine. It is the growth in the hero, when he knows the worst to come, of that will, or stoicism, or complete indifference to fate, which the Indians regard as equivalent to attaining Motulin, or magic power. When a man has in him such courage that nothing earthly can do more than increase it, he has attained to what is in one sense at least Nirvana. From an Algonquin point of view, the plot is perfect. I have given this story accurately as it was told to me by Toma Josephs, a Passamaquoddy Indian. How one of the partridge's wives became a sheldrake duck, and why her feet and feathers are red. Nacarneyu, of the old time, there was a hunter who lived in the woods. He had a brother who was so small that he kept him in a box, and when he went forth he closed this very carefully, for fear lest an evil spirit, Mitchahant, should get him. Footnote. The word brother is so generally applied in adoption or friendship that it cannot here be taken in a literal sense. The brother, in this case, seems to have been a goblin or spirit. End footnote. One day this hunter, returning, saw a very beautiful girl sitting on a rock by a river making a moccasin. And being in a canoe, he paddled up softly and silently to capture her, but she, seeing him coming, jumped into the water and disappeared. On returning to her mother, who lived at the bottom of the river, she was told to go back to the hunter and be his wife. "For now," said the mother, "you belong to that man." The hunter's name was Michihis the Partridge. When she came to his lodge, he was absent, so she arranged everything for his return, making a bed of boughs. At night he came back with one beaver. This he divided, cooked one half for supper, and laid by the other half. In the morning when she awoke, he was gone, and the other half of the beaver had also disappeared. That night he returned with another beaver, and the same thing took place again. Then she resolved to spy and find out what all this meant. So she laid down and went to sleep, wide awake, with one eye open. Then he quietly rose and cooked the half of the beaver, and taking a key unlocked a box, and took out a little red dwarf and fed him. Replacing the elf, he locked him up again, and lay down to sleep, and the small creature had eaten the whole half beaver. But ere he put him in his box, he washed him and combed his hair, which seemed to delight him. The next morning, when her husband had gone for the day, the wife sought for the key, and having found it, opened the box, and called to the little fellow to come out. This he refused to do for a long time, though she promised to wash and comb him. Being at length persuaded, he peeped out, when she pulled him forth. But whenever she touched him, her hands became red, though of this she took no heed, thinking she could wash it off at will. But lo, while combing him, there entered a hideous being, an awful devil, who caught the small elf from her and ran away. Then she was terribly frightened, and trying to wash her hands, the red stain remained. When her husband returned that night, he had no game. When he saw the red stain, he knew all that had happened. When he knew what had happened, he seized his bow to beat her. When she saw him seize his bow to beat her, she ran down to the river and jumped in to escape death at his hands, though it should be by drowning. But as she fell into the water, she became a sheldrake duck, and to this day the marks of the red stain are to be seen on her feet and feathers. Footnote. Related to me by Noel Josephs, a Passamaquoddy. Notwithstanding its resemblance to Bluebeard, it is probably in every detail a very old Indian tradition. It bears a slight resemblance to several far western legends, which refer to peculiarities in the duck. It is partly repeated in a Lox legend. End of footnote and end of section 33.